Good evening, Bodhisattvas, fellow seekers, Sangha. I'm as I said last night, all these words, you know, really, it comes back down to the same thing every time. Sorry. That's the thing. But really the essence of this talk tonight is about the great liberation, which the Buddha realized. So, Feng Shui said, if one raises a speck of dust, the nation prospers. If one does not raise a speck of dust, the nation perishes. Sueto made a comment after this. He held up his staff and he said, is there anyone who lives and dies with this? So, how about this speck of dust? With one speck of dust, the nation prospers. So, Zen texts and Zen literature are replete with metaphor, as you probably realise by now. And the metaphors sort of dance about. One minute they're this, and the next minute they're that. They're very sprightly. And with this metaphor of dust is traditionally for the sources of sensation. Often it's also a metaphor for thought, but sometimes it's a metaphor for the six dusts, which become sight, sound, taste, smell, touch, and thought, which as you chant, as we all chant, Avalokiteshvara, practicing Diprajna Paramita, clearly saw, were empty. All these skandhas are empty, transforming anguish and distress. In Zen Sand, which is a wonderful collection of capping phrases and verses put together by a Zen scholar called Victor Hori, I think it might be in the library, it's very, very wonderful. There are over 30 references to dust in Zen Sand, and here are a few of them in which specks of dust play a prominent role. The ground of actuality is not defiled by even a mote of dust, is one. And everywhere real, this dust, that dust, all our original self. And on top of a hair, manifest the land of the jewel king. On a mote of dust, turn the great wheel of the Dharma. Form, after all, is no other than emptiness, emptiness no other than form. We come forth in perfect harmony, warts and all. Keizan Zenji put it like this: though we find clear waters ranging to the vast blue sky in autumn, how can it compare with the hazy moon on a spring night? Most people want to have it pure white, but sweep as you will, you cannot empty the mind. Dust in all directions, how endearing. Sweep as you will, you cannot empty the mind. We are, after all, beings of thoughts, which is one of the things we learn by practicing Zazen. By now in Sesshin, some of us may have noticed how the practice takes away many of our thoughts and assumptions. That when we witness things as they emerge from emptiness, we might find that we too are always just emerging, our bodies still wet with our mother's fluids. We have no definite shape or identity and are essentially unknown, essentially unknowable. We are a something vast and infinite, not limited by having a self. We may have discovered that when we don't hold on to sets of beliefs about who we are, many things are open and possible. For Bodhidharma, the mythical founder of Chan, prajna, wisdom, lies precisely in not knowing. You may remember when the Emperor of China, a great powerful being, asked this raggedy Indian monk, "Who was this standing before me?" Bodhidharma said, "I don't know." When we forget ourselves, the world does indeed come to us. And here is where our responsibility enters. Our minds naturally turn to all the other sentient beings that we partake of, as the Buddha's mind turned to his five disciples in Varanasi after his realization experience. But tonight, he is still Siddhartha Gautama sitting beneath the Bodhi tree, confident he will solve and he will resolve his koan very soon. In fact, he resolves his koan tomorrow morning when the morning star blazes in the sky. So, prajna is the sixth paramita, and dana, as I said on the first day, is the first paramita. And in the old Chinese texts, wisdom, prajna, is a synonym for intimacy, just like kensho is a synonym for intimacy, that supremely eloquent word. And we can all awake to prajna. And I'll read an encouraging, sort of rousing, sort of piece of writing by Dogen's Dharma Heir here. He said, when people seek the way, it should be like an ordinary person trying to meet a great beauty or trying to overcome a powerful adversary or like trying to take on a strong castle or take a strong castle. When the determination is deep and strong, the beauty will be met, the strong castle overcome. When you apply this determination to the way, 1,000, even 10,000 people will acquire the way. Therefore, do not think that the way evaluates potentials so that beginners or later starters cannot attain it. In this realm, there is neither sharp nor dull, no distinctions. Once you raise up a strong determination, you will have a deep experience of it. Absolutely. That's right. So prajna is illumination, light, enlightenment. And very few Buddhist teachers have written about it directly. One mention of prajna happens when the very new young monk Huining comes to Hunzhen for the first time. And he says, "May I tell your holiness that prajna frequently arises in my mind?" Hongjin changed the subject and sent him to the backyard to hull the rice. "Wash your mouth out." Later in his own teaching, Huining spoke of prajna. He linked it with jhana, likening prajna to the light and jhana to the lamp. As you know, jhana is the Sanskrit word which became channa when it entered China. And dhyana is the form and the method of zazen. So zazen is seated dhyana. And so that's the lamp. And without the lamp, there can be no prajna. There can be no realization. It's not possible. Dogen Zenji mentions prajna, but only infrequently. Although prajna frequently, if not continually, arose in his mind too. So this is his well-known summary of our way. To study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be confirmed by the 10,000 things. To be confirmed by the 10,000 things is to drop off body and mind, and to drop off body and mind of others. No trace of this realization remains, and this no trace is continued endlessly. So the first two sentences relate to dhyana, which is to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. And then prajna enters. To forget the self is to be confirmed by the 10,000 things. When we're intimate, we've forgotten ourselves. When we're not intimate, we are in our heads. Body and mind dropped away is Nirodha, the third noble truth. Realization, or prajna, is the dropped away body and mind, which is the practice afterwards. And bodhisattvas live by prajna paramita. When they've seen clearly that there is no eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, as the Heart Sutra says, and find that compassion, kindness, just arrives by itself without effort. The Buddha's teachings set out in the Four Noble Truths, and as I said, Nirodha, extinction or emptiness, is the third truth. The fourth truth, which is the Eightfold Path, is the way to sustain it. Because prajna arises in the mind and falls too. Apparently there's a saying in Japanese monasteries that if you have a deep kensho, your skin does not stop quivering for 3 days. But it does stop. So, we renew ourselves moment by moment, even after having an experience of emptiness. We don't idle along, coasting on our past glories. We maintain our realization carefully. Why would we choose to be careless? So, when we realize that we've become distracted and confused, we take charge of our attention. We sort of become like a mother with a slightly unruly toddler. We are careful and kind and cheerfully patient with it. And we take charge and we bring our attention right back. It's more than a matter of focusing, it is completion. When we're not attentive, everything is a blur. When we are attentive, everything stands out, like the bird, the bell, each breath. But what a relief to realise that perceptions and the things perceived are without substance. The world is always coming back at us, with all its ego-centred and ego-created pain and anguish. But Avalokiteshvara knows all about their causes and is now free from their blind compulsions. Emotions rise and fall, but the empirical self no longer sits there waiting to strike back. Affinity doesn't necessarily become lust. Betrayal doesn't necessarily lead to hatred. The one who's defended the self can at last acknowledge that very same self as a particular and peculiar form of the essential mystery. So all that was fixed and definite and rigid and sure gives way. Gives way. There was an American woman in the last century, I love saying that, in the last century, Flora Courtois, on her very own, found her way to Kensho. And she's written a little book about it, and it's really, really interesting. Basically, for a long time, the powers that be, the doctors, etc., thought she had literally gone mad. I think she even was put in hospital, but she wasn't mad at all. She finally met up with Yasutani Roshi, and he confirmed her experiences. And this is Flora's writing about her experience. So she hasn't been through, you know, she hasn't been through years of Zen training. She's been doing this all on her own, finding her way. Amazing. She writes, with the ego absorbed in this immediate and intimate attention moment to moment, there is no separate experience of enlightenment, no path, no chasm to be bridged. No longer living in the old way, we are lived. Nothing has been lost. All our skills, strategies, relationships and memories are available for service to a more harmonious mode of being. Far from becoming special, we become more down to earth, direct, natural. We become as little children with everything we've learned since in our pockets. All the energy we previously expended in support of our separate selves is now free to flow in the Tao of working, dancing, laughing, sleeping, just living. We are free to save the many beings, including the one who saves, this one. And the way of practice opens out at last. Layman Pang said it like this: when the mind is at peace, the world too is at peace. Nothing real, nothing absent, not holding on to reality, not getting stuck in the void. We are neither holy nor wise, just ordinary people who are completing our work. Is there anyone here who lives and dies by this? So, on the second last night of our Rohatsu session, honouring our founding teacher Shakyamuni, we summon all our energy and breath with Shakyamuni under the Bodhi tree. And then our treasure will shine forth with astounding light. And this is the great freedom. So don't become despondent if nothing seems to be happening. One of the things that we must realize is that patience is the Tao of all the Buddhas. And it's not endurance, it's loving acceptance, breath by breath. So there's nothing to gain. Breath by breath, simple, bare attention, and we are then truly the sons and daughters of the Buddha.